You are listening to Powder Radio. Brought to you by Powder Magazine. Welcome to Sponsored, brought to you by Powder Magazine. I'm your host, Mike Powell, and our guest this week is Clayton Vila, and we are going to talk to Clayton about his rise in the ski world. He started as a kid from Block Island, far away from any ski hill, and we'll talk to him about how he got into skiing, what changed for him when he went to Waterville Valley, and the connection he made with the Step Crew and how that changed the face of his skiing. We'll also find out what Clayton is up to now. He's living in California, and while he is still a skier, he's got a lot of other things going on. We'll find out all of that from Clayton Vila coming up now.
Hey, what's up, pal? How you doing, bud?
Not too bad, man. Yourself?
Good. It's been a while, huh?
Yeah, it's been quite a while. We usually talk quite a bit over the past 5-6 years, and it seems like we haven't talked since the Powder Awards last year. What's been going on in your life?
Oh, yeah, since then, I guess a good amount. Same old stuff, though. Skiing, working on some films, and hanging out. I actually kind of taken some more time off, so to speak, is one way to put it, than I have in the past. I haven't had like a normal feature ski film that I'm making this year. So I've had some time to focus on some other projects and do some surfing and ski some park without having anybody film me and that kind of thing. So yeah, it's been a good year for sure.
It's got to be a lot of fun to actually go ski for yourself and not have cameras on you.
Yeah, it is definitely something I, to be honest, have not done in a long time. Kind of needed that for sure.
It wasn't like, oh, okay, I need to go ski for fun. It was more that we had X Games. That whole event compressed my season into 6 weeks, which was like the most intense 6 weeks. So after that, I just, to be honest, I had no time to talk to sponsors and put together some kind of movie after the fact, and it didn't really snow after. So I was like, you know what, I'm taking the rest of the season to just do me and do some skiing and yeah, have a good time. So
nice. And where are you now?
I'm in Los Angeles. Yeah, I live out here now.
Okay, and what are you doing out there? I know you're not defined as a skier. There's a lot of things that define you. Skiing would be one of them. But what are you pursuing in Los Angeles?
Yeah, I'm a filmmaker, so it helps to be out here. But first and foremost, I grew up in Block Island, Rhode Island, which is an island in the middle of the ocean, as you know. And I am not someone who grew up being landlocked and living in the mountains. And it was just sort of starting to wear on me. And yeah, I want to get back to the water. So figured I've spent a lot of time here in the past just doing filmmaking work. And I have a bunch of friends out here. And just a good place for me to be by the water and yeah, work on my filmmaking. And then come wintertime, I just travel to ski the same way I do anywhere else. Sounds a little silly, but I guess in this point in my career, it's a pretty perfect setup. It almost makes me more motivated to go out and go skiing every year as opposed to just living in Colorado all year round. Yeah, it just was a little much for me.
Yeah, I would think you've got the sun, you've got the water, and then when you go ski, it's a business trip and you're taking care of business, getting things done, and you're probably on a mission whenever you leave California.
Yeah, I mean, that's always how it is. You know, pro skiing is. It's not like because I live in Colorado, I'm doing all my filming and skiing in Colorado. So, you know, I do the street thing, so I almost never am doing anything in my backyard. Pretty much doesn't make much of a difference whatsoever in terms of how my pro skiing life operates. I just get to surf now and be by the ocean and live a happier, healthier lifestyle. So it's been good.
Nice. That sounds fun. And speaking of surf and how you grew up on Block Island, your childhood was dominated by surfing, skateboarding. And what was life like on Block Island? How many people were there and what was life like?
It's beautiful. It's incredible. I mean, it's 10 square miles, so it's super small. Yeah, there's a lot that comes with the place that is kind of negative. In the summer, there's 50,000 people, and it's like crazy tourist atmosphere, super social, like whatever, typical high school kind of life. And then all winter, there's only 900 to 1,000 year-round residents, and there's just nobody. To be honest, everything goes from green to brown, and it's just sort of just a wasteland. The cool thing was you could do whatever you want. You know, we'd drive around shooting guns out of our car, you know, like you're totally like Wild West if you wanted to be. But, you know, at the same time, it definitely gets old. Yeah, you know, we talk about it like we did time out there, so we're ready to be done with it, you know. But, you know, it also was just an incredible kind of experience that made me who I am. When I look back on it, it's kind of surreal almost that that's where I lived doing what I do now. Where you come from makes you who you are, and it's a very interesting place. That's what made me who I am. So yeah, it was cool.
And how did you get into skiing living on an island?
My dad was a big skier, so we would take trips. We'd go up to Sunday River and a couple other places on the East Coast, like a couple weekends a year. We would take one big trip to Colorado and Crested Butte, like almost every year.
Nice.
I look forward to that trip. I was stoked on it. And for whatever reason, I was particularly good at it. I obviously was athlete in general. I surfed and all that. I think I just like flipping and stuff. I used to like do backflips off the dunes. I don't know. I was just one of those kids, you know, just wanted to go upside down all the time. I was naturally good on the skis, and then those two things kind of just collided. And I showed enough skill in it naturally to the point that my dad and my parents were like, oh, okay, like this is something we should maybe look into this kid to see if we can find some kind of program for him to pursue it because he clearly can't do it out here. So when I was 14, that's when I started to do the Waterville Valley Academy. And I did like kind of a makeshift setup of it. We had a friend who lived up there who we like stayed at their house, basically. They like hosted people who went to the academy. But yeah, long story short, I got to ski half the day and go to school half the day for a couple months a year and do the typical East Coast comp circuits. And yeah, I used my time wisely. And I wasn't quite good enough to be a successful comp skier, to be honest. So I threw in the towel on that, which I caught some heat for. But the other day, I was going to be the number four guy for like life if I kept that one going. So I had to make kind of a humble decision to toss that one in. And then I did the street thing after I moved out of Colorado. And the rest is what it is. And now I'm doing that.
So you're in school and going to Waterville Academy, that's got to be pretty expensive, I would think.
Yeah.
That's a tribute to your parents for ponying up the dollars to do that and seeing the potential in you and saying, hey, we're going to support what he's really good at and we'll see where it takes him. You're competing a lot. Did your parents give you heat for not wanting to compete anymore?
I mean, yeah, you know, I wouldn't say that it was something where I was having arguments with anybody about the thing, you know. I wouldn't say anybody directly gave me shit to my face about it, I guess, or anything like that.
Were they disappointed?
You got to understand. Well, you understand better than anybody. When I set out to do this whole street skiing thing, it wasn't quite a thing so much.
Right.
I mean, don't get me wrong, obviously. We did not invent street skiing. There certainly wasn't anybody out there at the time doing only that and making any kind of legit career out of it, like on a corporate level, you know?
Yeah.
So it certainly sounded pretty stupid, which I understood. So I wasn't ever there like, yo, you just got to listen to me. Like, I'm trying to be core. I'm like, no, this is kind of a business call. Like, I think that this is something I could be number one at potentially as opposed to number five at. So this might be kind of my only shot. That's just what I wanted to do. I felt like I could maintain my integrity a little more, just do my own thing. And it just seemed like the right decision. And it was a lot of passion and a little bit of logic, but I got lucky and it worked out.
But it was something different that you were doing. But I met you as a street skier. And when I think back to Clayton Vila as a half pipe skier, it almost makes me laugh because I look at the people who focus on pipe. It's really technical. You have to train as much as you can to get your line down. And it's very regimented. And none of that is what I attribute to Clayton Vila. I think of you as someone who is looking at things as a blank canvas and trying out new things. And there's no set run that you're putting together. But when you're a pipe skier, it's almost like you're a full-on athlete because you have to be in amazing shape and you're regimented. And the street avenue that you took later on in life was a totally different mindset to what you're doing in the half pipe.
Yeah, so I guess at the time when I was skiing pipe, I thought of it the same way, but I just knew that I wasn't going to be able to maintain as a half pipe skier because of pretty much what you just said. Like, Waterville didn't have a half pipe. It was just like a couple icy jumps. And so I would only hit jumps, but then for whatever reason, maybe less people skied it or I was particularly good at it, a combination of the two, whatever it was. I would just go charge the pipe at competitions and like do my best. And so it was like almost improv the way you're saying it.
Okay.
So yeah, that lasted and I would get lucky. And then it slowly turned into, all right, I guess I have a run now, but I wouldn't ski pipe in between the competitions. I'd have like a day or two to like warm up in the beginning and I'd like learn a new trick and figure it out. And so I was really just getting lucky and sort of going about it that way. But you're exactly right. As soon as it got to the point where I was doing like World Cups and that kind of stuff and think about trying to get an X Games invite, which there's pretty much no way to actually do that besides just random politics.
Yeah.
Another reason why it didn't last for me. I was like, I'm not going to sit around and wait for that. Anyway, the point is it would have been almost impossible for my personality to really enter into that sort of training regimen and that just mentality.
And then it seemed like you focused more on slope after that. And with slope, I think it's a little bit looser there. You can go in there without a run and put some tricks together. What made you stop competing? Because you were pretty damn good, but it wasn't something that you really focused on. And I don't know what your mentality was going into contest. Did you even like competing?
Dude, I'm like an extremely competitive person. So So that was pretty much all it was. I would say it was slope. All my friends did slope. That was pretty much it. I mean, that was the other thing about pipe, too. I didn't have any friends directly that were still, like, living in Colorado or anything that did half pipe. That, at the end of the day, is, like, a large part of what brought me where I am in my career or just life decisions in general. I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to go hike a pipe alone.
Right, yeah.
Are you kidding me? You know, I wasn't going to do that. Yeah, the same with slope. All my friends did it, and I just be honest with slope. I never had a chance. I was a lot better in half pipe, and that would have been my one shot. I would never say that I had a shot of being any sort of legit competitor in slope style. I mean, yeah, I had tricks and stuff, but when it came down to comp, I'd just blow it, and that was stupid. Jumps are fun, I think, at the end of the day. It was the only thing that got me decently good at it.
Okay. And then I'll fast forward a little bit. You went to Waterville. You met up with Nick Martini at Waterville. And how did the relationship with the Step crew develop?
We all knew each other from New Hampshire. You know, those guys were in a similar, they went to Holderness, that like prep school that also skied at Waterville. So that's how I knew them. But we didn't like film or do too much together in high school. That was just the group in Colorado. They were all hitting handrails. Yeah, Nick was doing super well at the time with his career and was shooting with like poor boys and stuff like that. And Cam was living in the house with all those dudes. And I had known Cam, but when we were living in the same area in Colorado, we started hanging out a lot. And it was like before we even started skiing, we were just kind of like shooting the shit about what we wanted to do with street and stuff, and just kind of connected on like the same sort of vision, I guess. And come winter time, Cam started really going for it. And to be honest, it was sort of the first time that I had hit handrails for like a segment. I had hit a couple before that without much attention or success, because like I said, I was doing a half pipe thing and whatever.
Yep.
We just connected and we're really like drove off each other and were competitive, and we just got into a groove and started to really hit some big stuff. And yeah, that was pretty much what kicked off that whole relationship with those guys. And we made network and we did all right. Yeah. And we decided that that's what we're going to keep doing for years to come.
And around that time, you had Zach Davidson working with you. Is that correct?
Yeah, that was super, super brief. He linked me up with you. And then almost immediately after that, he fell off the radar. I don't really know what's going on, what happened with that. But that was like super brief and super awesome and lucky, because it hooked me up with K2. But that literally lasts like a few months. And then me and Dylan Malone, who is my agent now and has been for years to come, is, who I've worked with ever since.
Well, I remember getting that call from Zach and him telling me about you, and then me telling him, hey, I don't work with agents. I'm going to call Clayton direct. So I did circumvent him there, and that was at a time where you could do that. And in talking to you coming onto the K2 program, I was blown away by your vision. Skateboarding had been a big part of your life, and I think the videos that you had seen in skateboarding had shaped what you wanted your skiing to be. And my big question mark was, you were coming out of Waterville Valley, and a lot of times you see those academy kids come with a little bit of a robotic style, and that was really my big concern about bringing you onto the program. But then when I realized that you didn't really care about competing or jumps and you're going to spend your time in the streets, that all faded away. And getting your first big sponsor, what did that mean to you? And then how did that act as a springboard for the rest of your career?
I mean, yeah, right off the bat, like, you're totally right about that stigma that comes with, like, being from an academy. And I don't think a lot of people even, not that I hide it or anything, like, know or would think that that's, like, the background I came from. But at the end of the day, I mean, somebody like my situation is exactly what those things are for. I lived on an island, you know,
yeah.
But I had a talent, I guess, and it gave me that opportunity. And Waterville Valley, that program is legit and it's badass. We studied out of a barn. They're still doing that. And they let me live in a friend's place, so I didn't have to pay for the dorms fully. And they made it work for people who they actually thought had talent. I don't know how much anybody at an academy would appreciate the path I took. But at the same time, you know, you can't beat the competitive background that you get working with like a coach. That helps me as a street skier even today. Yeah, just going back to your next question of K2, I mean, that was incredible for me because, I mean, I look at K2 because of the team, you know. It had a bunch of dudes and none of them competed. I'm like, these people are backing people who are just doing what I want to do and skiing with utmost integrity and pushing skiing in other ways beyond competition, which is why I was like, wow, if I can get in with these dudes, I might be able to make this idea of street skiing full-time work. And before that, I was skiing with, I had like a few sponsors and like, you know, I had like travel budget and whatever. But I pretty much lost every single sponsor when I stopped
competing, because that was the only reason any of those sponsors were interested in me. I was with Rossignol and Smith and some other people. And yeah, I think the only reason that they were blowing me and giving me travel and stuff, like, oh, hopefully this kid wins something someday. And then I'm like, hey, I'm doing this. Like, cool, you're an idiot. It was pretty awesome, man. Pretty much is the best way to put it. That saved my ass and got me on a different path and really made things work.
And I think it's safe to say that the crew that you were skiing with helped bring street skiing to the masses. It existed for a long time, but not at the level that you guys were doing it at. And you guys spread that worldwide. And you can see that now on edits, you know, all over the internet of kids going out. You don't have to live at a mountain. You don't have to pay $175 for a lift ticket. You can go ski the streets. And in your street skiing, it's a totally different experience. You deal with a lot of builds, a lot of cops, a lot of things that the regular skier doesn't have to deal with. And what's the most challenging part of being a street skier? And when you go into a season, what are the things that you're worried about?
Yeah, I mean, there's all that. And obviously, yeah, building cops and all that. I mean, it's just basically, it's not about skiing, you know, and I don't want to be redundant because it's sort of what that documentary I made was about. But I mean, that really is it. You just got to really like use your intellect in terms of just everything, you know, like it's about problem solving, critical thinking as much as it is skiing. Everything you do is usually the first one to have done it. So you're just using your experience and guessing as best you can, making educated guesses on where to build everything and how to be safe about it and how many speed checks you're going to take, you know, how many you're allowed to given how high profile a spot is, and just all that going into it is just enormously stressful, you know. It's more just about the nights before you do something really crazy. You're like, oh man, I have no idea this is going to work. Am I wasting everybody's time? And am I going to kill myself? You know, you're just venturing out on something that you just have every day, an entire segment, the whole thing. The whole career, you just don't know. You never have any sort of certainty.
And one thing that goes along with your skiing is the influence of skateboarding. When I talked to you in the beginning, you had mentioned skateboarding and the way the video parts came out were totally different than what you saw in skiing, and you wanted to model your skiing after some of the stuff that you had seen in skate videos, and want to get your take on that and how it really crafted what you're doing.
Yeah, the inspiration from skateboarding is probably more about the industry than it is like the tricks or what people do on skateboards and trying to emulate that. It was more an inspiration of that industry. People make video part, and that is the highest level of respect because they see that as the thing that is progressing sport the most. If you win every competition, you barely get the respect that you are looking for from professionals of the industry, team managers, etc., until you make a solid video part. I mean, obviously, I'm a street skier, and that's a lot like skateboarding, so I look up to them in terms of the tricks, and etc., but I mean, you know, it's so apples and oranges, it's totally different. So yeah, it's not about copying tricks. I think every sport would benefit from an outlook like that. I think competition is incredible, and I think it's a great part of our sport, but yeah, sometimes I think, obviously, we put a little bit too much of our industry's eggs in the basket of competition.
I totally agree with you. You know, the video part, what you put together is something that's going to live forever, and while you'll have a contest victory forever, it really doesn't stay in the hearts of kids at all. I mean, they see the contest, they say, oh, that guy was awesome, he won, now let's go watch Clayton's part again.
Yeah, hopefully, that's what I'd like to think. That's how I thought, so that's how I went about it.
And then some of the consequences from some of the builds that you do, they're ridiculous, some of the features you guys find, and the vision you have to see a ledge and figure that you can construct something to create an amazing trick. But some of the consequences you have experienced firsthand, and I'm not talking about the breaks of the hand or shoulders, but you took cheese grater stairway to the face, and it's something that you see every day you look in the mirror. You've got a huge scar on your face from street skiing. And did that make you rethink what you were doing when you had that injury?
Yeah, that injury was actually before I even really made a big push towards street, which is interesting. Yeah, when I was just younger in high school, like trying to mess around on handrails. I think everybody has an experience like that. If they go to try to hit urban, you don't take it too seriously until you realize that there's no fucking around and there's some serious consequence. And it's interesting. I think that sort of made me want to redeem myself a little bit from that. You have to admit, it was definitely gnarly. I could see my jaw at 80 stitches, and it was a huge facial laceration. yeah, like you said, looking in the mirror every day. It just goes to show you that you got to know what you're doing, and it's ready to bite you in the ass if you don't. And it's not just about being good at skiing, and that's what I didn't take into account, and it might have given me a little more fascination in how the sport works. And for whatever reason, I'm still doing it. And to be honest, there's a lot of ways to stay safe doing it. And like I said before, it's just about being smart and trying to use the critical thinking skills to make sure that everything you build will work, and that's how you make a part and stay on your feet throughout it.
When I go to your website, now I'll say it's ClaytonVila.tv. And why did you go with the TV address?
I don't know.
So when I go to the website, there's nothing that calls you out as a skier. You're a filmmaker, you're an editor, you can work behind the camera. Is there a reason that you don't call yourself out as an athlete on your site?
Yeah, I mean, that's just basically because, you know, my skiing is advertised through like my social media and fan pages and stuff like that. It doesn't really call for a need for a website. So as a filmmaker, it does. And that website in particular is to promote my filmmaking as opposed to my social media accounts and stuff like that that represent me as a skier.
Okay.
It doesn't mean I'm trying to be one, not the other.
Okay. So the shelf life on a street skier can't be more than 5 to 6 years, I would think, just based on the risk that you're putting yourself in with every feature that you're doing. And I'm not saying you can't do it anymore, but I'm sure at some point, all the effort that goes in, all the pain, the blood, sweat, and tears, I can see that getting to be too much, and maybe that's why you're taking a little time off in the preseason this year. Where's Clayton Beale going to be in 10 years?
I would like to still be doing this, to be honest. And I, you know, in response to what you just said, it's what comes to mind, anything in the street skier and you watch it, you're like, oh, this can't last long. But to be honest, when you say that, I guess you really would need to be out there with us to see how we go about it. I just think that it is something that could be sustainable. You know, we make it look like we're, you know, where's your knees? And you're just like totally getting fucked up every time. But you get injured just as much doing other things. And to be honest, I think that it is something that I could do for a long time, the way I go about it. You have a dial, that's all that matters. I mean, you're absolutely right. It's risky, one of the more risky in terms of injury. One bright side is we're not going to die. I mean, well, you know, that's, we're not in the backcountry ready to hit by an avalanche. Let me say that. Like, when I say that, well, that's a ridiculous risk to take. And as far as flying out of a half pipe constantly, like, you can say the same thing. I feel like people see half pipe skiers and like, oh, well, they're professionals. So, you know, they'll be doing this forever. But they look at us and like, those kids are just lunatic jackasses who are just going to be broken off by the time they're however many old. But in reality, I would say the wear and tear is pretty similar. But one thing you're absolutely right about is it may be one of the more wearing mentally in terms of work ethic and, you know, more just about like being in crappy cities, staying in hotels and getting up and, you know, -20 in Minnesota, filming your friends and your fingers are falling off and you got nothing to show for it at the end of the day. That whole thing is what, if anything, wears on you. But I don't see myself stopping anytime soon. I am a filmmaker, but that's not me being, all right, you know, I'm going to smoothly transition my skiing into filmmaking soon. That's not where my head's at. My head is when I'm passionate about something, I pursue it. And any pro skier has a good amount of time off. And most people choose to do nothing with it and hang, which is a certain kind of personality. And I think that's awesome. If that's what you want to do. But for me, when I have time off, I am progressing my filmmaking because I like doing it. And plain and simple, why I am a filmmaker. I just like doing it.
I guess, you know, one thing that separates maybe contest skiers or, you know, guys in the backcountry compared to what I see in one of your films is when those guys nail a trick and stomp a trick, they're going to try not to claim, but they will claim their tricks sometimes when they land them, hands up in the air, they're excited and elated. And then when you get your trick, it is more a deep breath and relief and thank God, a different end reaction to getting the trick.
Yeah, I mean, no, there's times where you throw your hands up. Like in backcountry, if you do a trick first hit, that's part of how backcountry works, right? And if that's the case, yeah, you're going to be like, woo, you know, because it's a ton of work of building, right? You build for days, one and done. Yeah, big release. You know, by the time we landed, we tried sometimes 100 times. And yeah, there's no more joy left. You know, you're stoked, but it's just a different kind of stoked. You accomplish something and it's like finishing a marathon. You're not just like, yeah, high fives. You're like, holy shit, I'm glad that's over and I'm glad I did it. But right now it's not the time for doing a cartwheel.
Yeah, it's a good way to put it. It's like finishing a marathon. I never thought of it like that.
Not that I've run a marathon. I'm in a half marathon. So I don't know. Maybe that was.
Yeah, I've done a half too. I actually got carried over the finish line by 2 pregnant women. I had my arms around their shoulders because I couldn't make it. That's how bad I was. But enough about me. I want to know about finances. You don't have to give me any details, but does skiing pay the bills? Can you actually make enough money to go and buy the things you like to do based on just your skiing?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, man. I mean, I've been blessed to be very financially stable from street skiing, which is a product of making the right decisions, a lot of luck, and a lot of hard work. And like I said, I got an agent and went out of my way to try to be that guy who tried to show value in it. And there's not a lot of room in this industry right now for that. So I definitely know a lot of people who deserve maybe more than I make, but look through the cracks of what's available out there, which isn't much, as you know.
Yep.
Yeah, I pursued that very hard for a while. And like you said, I was just out there really passionate and just young and obsessed. And this is what I'm doing, you know, and I guess some of that showed. And so I got the trust from some companies to fund my lifestyle and what I wanted to do with my career. Yeah, I'm really blessed to have had that opportunity.
And who is paying the bills of Clayton Vila? What sponsors do you have?
Monster Energy, K2 Skis, O'Neill Outerwear was a recent new sponsor of mine, which is awesome.
Nice. Ties into your surf passion.
Yeah, isn't it incredible? Like right when I move out to the ocean, I get a wetsuit sponsor. It was pretty ironic. I put being a pro surfer behind me a long time ago. Definitely it was like an actual dream sponsor. Look Bindings is actually a newer one. They're doing a big push to support some athletes. It's pretty awesome. The Full Tilt Boot thing. I've worked for Gibberish forever. Those guys are awesome. And yeah, pretty cool lineup for sure. Couldn't ask for a better lineup. People who just accept my skiing for what it is and what I do in my career.
Nice. Well, I think they're all very excited that last year you were able to put together a project, for lack of better, that told your crew's story of what street skiing is. And I highly recommend anybody out there to see it. And I can tell you it's amazing. But really, if you look at the awards that it won Movie of the Year at the Powder Awards. It also won Best Documentary at the Powder Awards. No other movie has done that before. And I know you and your crew might have felt slighted in the past at the Powder Awards, or I'm going to put those words into your mouth and you can take them away from me if you like. But last year was the year you guys won it all and you guys won the biggest awards. And how did that feel? Did that justify everything that you guys have been doing for the past 8 years? Or was it just another night and you got the award and it's on the resume?
No, I mean, that was absolutely incredible. I mean, yeah, to respond to you thinking that maybe we thought we deserved more. Oh, I'll at least speak myself. That wasn't the case for me. I think that we've always been blessed to even have like one of those nominations with any of the movies we made through STEP in the past. Yeah, I mean, it's a Powder Award, so by definition, we didn't ever expect to win. You know, I won Best Jib a while ago. That was amazing. And the whole event is just great. But yeah, that was much more than another night. That movie was a really cool opportunity to be in a place where I could have the freedom to make that film and really got to show people why we do it. And that was the goal. And I've learned a lot about storytelling and about writing and that kind of stuff. And so that film was a learning experience. And I went about it like, all right, I want to make the world's shittiest actual movie, you know, with a real plot, three acts, and the whole nine yards, not the best ski movie. So I had no expectations. I really didn't. And yeah, Cam and I laughed hysterically in our seats when we won, like not out of anything, but just like joy, pretty much. It was such a huge surprise. And yeah, it was amazing. I didn't know what to think of it because I felt like a lot of people were probably disappointed in the crowd. So I kind of just said thank you and put the mic down and left. I had also drank a lot since we won Best Documentary. I figured that was all she wrote. So I was going to get drunk. And then next thing you know, I was like, oh God.
Well, the movie was amazing. I highly recommend everybody see it. And Clayton, I want to thank you for coming on to Sponsored and sharing your story. And I'm sure we'll talk to you again in the future. But thanks a ton for coming on, man.
Yeah, man. Good to hear from you, pal. We'll see you at the Power Awards in like a week, right?
Yeah, I'll see you in like a couple of days.
Oh, yeah. Holy crap. Yeah. Yeah,
all right, man.
I'm presenting, right? So I don't know if you need that. So I'll be on the stage with you sometime.
I do know you're presenting, and I will be introducing you. So I will see you in Colorado, and thanks.
Good, dude. All right, man. Good to hear from you. We'll be in touch. Peace, buddy.
So that was time with Clayton Vila. One of the hardest workers in skiing and also seems to have his head on pretty straight. Living in California right now, couldn't take the mountain lifestyle, it sounds like. Wanted to be near the water and then travel to do his skiing. And we have more of Clayton over on Inappropriate Questions. You can hear that at thepowellmovement.com. Ski season is here. It's deep in the Northwest. I hope everybody's getting out and enjoying it. But if you're not able to get out and you're stuck at a desk and you have some show feedback for me, you can reach me at PowellMovement1 on Twitter or shoot me an email at mike@thepowellmovement.com. Next week's guest is Carl Fosfett. Have a great week, everybody.